All right, I'd like to commence the meeting. We have a legal quorum present. Again, I'd like to have the opportunity to sort of navigate through this and put on some issues that require votes. I will be leaving at 9 to attend a medical meeting. And again, I indicated that Trustee Graves, as a vice chairperson, will be conducting the meeting from that point on, and will be trusted in her very capable hands. That being the case, if we can proceed to item 2, approval of meeting minutes of the meeting of May 19th, what's the trustee's pleasure on item 2?
This is Kathy Graves, so moved.
Motion has been made by Trustee Graves. Is there a second to the motion?
Mr. Chair, Mark Petrosimone, I'll second it.
Is there a discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion probably made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye by voice vote.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Justin Elliker, aye.
Jerry Sagnell, aye. Item 3, we'll put on hold administrative matters momentarily. Item 4, age annuity, rule of 80, or early retirement, information only. Does not require deliberation by the trustees or vote. If there's not any, unless there's questions that the trustees might have on item 4, we can proceed to item 5. Again, contribution withdrawals, information only. If the trust, unless the trustees have a specific question on item 5. Item 6, death after retirement, information only. If we can have a moment of silence for the repose of the souls of Salvatore Durso and Paul Savage. And also under item 7, the death of Rose DeLucia, if we can have a moment of silence for the repose of the souls of the three individuals. Rest in peace. Item 8. Payment of bills. Board's pleasure on item 8.
This is Justin Elliker. I move that we approve the payment of the bills.
Motion's made. Is there a second?
Kathy Graves, I'll second.
Is there discussion on the motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate aye by voice vote.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrosimone, aye.
Justin Elliker, aye.
Jerry Sagnell, aye. There's a presentation being made today, right, Derek?
Yes, per Trustee Graves' request, we have a money manager that we currently have hired, our small cap value manager. Fuller and Thaler, but we put them on it for 9, Jerry, just because they're a West Coast firm. So yeah,
not a problem.
So we give them some grace on the time.
Okay. Well, then we can start on item 3, administrative matters. Outside earnings update.
This is Leanna Ambersley. We just put this on the agenda. We did the same last year, just as information only to notify the trustees. Outside earnings is due every year by April 30th. It's for those members who are retired and on a disability pension. They need to submit each year by April 30th, a signed notarized affidavit and their 1040 tax filing because they if they make more than $6,800 in outside earnings, then there's a reduction in their pension. This is just to notify the trustees that there are still about 7 individuals who have not submitted it. So their pensions will be paused for the month of June. Of course, when they do comply, they will be turned back on and they will be paid retro for what they are owed. But they were mailed a letter February 1st. They were given phone calls in April. They were mailed a second letter May 1st, and then they were mailed a certified letter on June 1st.
Very good. the rules are the rules. And I remember we've been through this. Again, it's not a rampant problem, but we have had these in the past. And sometimes the people were sort of on the elderly side and were in homes and things like that. But whatever the case be, you know, when they don't see the check arriving or the direct deposit going through, I'm sure we'll hear from them. Any questions on item A, 3A? 3B, SURF historical benefit payments. I believe this is something that the trustees had asked be prepared to look back historically at how payments had been proceeding. Is anybody, who will give the presentation on item B?
This is Leanna. It's not much of a presentation. Hooker and Holcomb is the one who came up with this. Okay. I did want to update you guys because at the last meeting, it was supposed to be Northern Trust was supposed to give the data, I think, from 2007 and 2014. Mm-hmm. And then Hooker and Holcomb from 2014, or vice versa, from 2014 to present. Northern Trust was kind of a nightmare with how they were giving us the data. The data was incorrect. Then they wanted me to do the report. So I had this conversation with them that because they were planning on charging us. So anyways, they're not charging us. I spoke to Hooker and Holcomb. Hooker and Holcomb said that they can do the entire, all the years to, you know, from all the years that we requested for the same price that you guys approved at last month's meeting. So all of this information was given to us by Hooker and Holcomb. This is the actual chart that they came up with. The historical benefit payments from 2005 to 2020.
Leanna.
Yes?
Yeah, we can hear you better now.
Okay. This is the chart that they came up with. It's, you know, the years are at the bottom and the values are by millions. I sent two PDFs and then this one kind of gives the percent increase from the prior year. I believe, I can't recall, I think this was Trustee Whetstone requested this information a couple meetings ago.
Since 2005, the benefits have gone up nearly double. It's understandable.
Pretty close to that, yeah.
And wasn't there an analysis being done as to comparing how the benefit payments have increased compared to the performance of the fund in terms of investments?
That I'm not sure. This was the request okay. From April, just to show the benefit payments all the way back from 2007.
Yep.
Susan, is this the information that you were looking for?
I have to be honest, I don't recall requesting this.
I think it was Trustee Zangari that asked for it.
Zangari only asked
you. Thank you.
And I think the other trustees had agreed with him.
Yeah.
He led the charge on it.
And this is just information only anyway.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. All right, it's nice information to have though.
Yep.
No further questions or comments on item B. If we can go to item 3C, new legislation regarding meetings. Carolyn?
Sure. This is Carolyn Cohn. Just to give this the whole context, before the pandemic, under the Freedom of Information Act, this board, as all state and municipal boards, met in person. Although it was permitted to have people, trustees join by phone if everybody in the room could hear them and the trustee could hear everybody else in the room. As you know, during the pandemic, the governor issued Executive Order 7B that allowed remote meetings, such as the one we're having today. And his order has been extended through June 30th. The legislature has given the governor the authority to extend this order through July 20th, but it's not clear whether he will do so. In the meantime, the State House of Representatives passed House Bill 6448. And that bill has not been passed by the Senate, but it's thought that in the special session, it will be passed as part of the implementer bill. And that bill allows each agency or each municipal board or state board to decide if they want to continue to have remote hearings, if they want to have in-person hearings, or if they want to have a hybrid of some of the trustees meeting in person and some of the trustees meeting remotely. One thing that is different from that, and you don't, a board or agency does not have to decide forever how it wants to conduct its meetings. It can decide meeting by meeting. And one thing that is different from this bill than from our current, from Executive Order 7B, if you decide to have purely remote meetings, then you have to have a room basically in a city hall where the public would have access to a computer and to be able to join the meeting virtually. And the, another difference is right now, all of the materials that you consider have to be posted on the website 24 hours in advance. That rule is not in HB 6448. So I don't know if you want to make a decision for your July meeting, how you wish to, you know, have it conducted, assuming this bill passes, or assuming that the executive order is extended through July 20th.
Your next meeting is July 21st, ironically.
Okay. Thank you.
So House Bill 6448 gives us authority to have a hybrid plan?
Yes.
Then I think that I'd like to move that we have a hybrid plan.
Motion's made by Trustee Graves. Is there a second to her motion?
Susan Whetstone, I'll second that motion.
Is there discussion on this motion?
What does that mean, a hybrid plan?
So some of that means that some of the trustees would actually meet in person at City Hall, but if other trustees didn't want to do that, they would have the option of meeting remotely. We'd probably need to have at least one trustee or two at City Hall.
So does it mean, well, I think that I need to have a discussion on this because I'm under the impression that we have to make our meetings available to the public. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to all sit in a room in City Hall, as long as it's giving them access. Am I clear?
I think a hybrid meeting means that some of the trustees will physically be present. They don't all need to be physically present, but at least one or two need to be physically present.
Yeah, I think we have a discussion about whether each trustee wants to be there. And if there's a trustee, and I think PNF will land in a different place, I speculate, but if there's a trustee that wants to be in person in City Hall, then we do a hybrid. If not, we can continue to do remote. I need to check in with Becky Bombero, who's kind of leading the coordination of for all the boards and commissions about our facilitating hybrid in person and access to Zoom meetings in City Hall, just for the logistics on that. But I'm happy continuing to meet on Zoom. I think it's convenient for folks. And maybe the other trustees could also articulate what their preference is, and that can help us land in the right spot here.
Mayor, I'd like to withdraw my motion because I was thinking that we would have the option to meet in person or virtually. Versus someone being in City Hall for the meeting. I'm thinking that we have the option to go either way. But no, I'm going to withdraw my motion and I'll restate it. I move that we continue to meet virtually.
I think your seconder, Ms. Whetstone, also needs to withdraw her second. If
I'm sorry.
Do so.
Yeah, I will withdraw my second.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So the first motion has been withdrawn, and Trustee Graves, you are making a motion to continue the Zoom meetings.
The virtual meetings, yes.
Right.
With the understanding that, and I guess that's something to coordinate with Becky Bombero, that
right.
needs to be somebody at City Hall that allows the public to have access.
To a computer, right.
So, I mean, the public has had access this whole time because all the information is posted on the website, but we have to physically give them
correct. Access. Correct. Correct. This is a change from, you know, the prior executive order.
Okay.
So is there a time limit on this virtual extension?
Where we have to revisit it again? Yes. Well, first of all, you can revisit it every meeting if you wish, you know, mm-hmm. but this bill does expire on April 30th, 2022. So it's a year.
Basically. All right. So if we're voting virtual, then we're basically saying that we're going to be doing virtual until April of 22.
Right. But this can be reviewed, you know, you can change
at any time.
Yeah.
Right, a motion was made by Trustee Graves. Was it seconded?
No. But I would be happy to second it. Susan Whetstone.
Right, Trustee Whetstone, to second that motion. Is there discussion on this motion?
Yeah, I support this motion. I think we see how it goes. You know, that things are, sure. are changing. And so it may be in a couple months we decide that it's more pertinent to.
Yeah, there's nothing written in stone here. Okay, any other discussion? Motion been properly made and second. All in favor indicate by saying aye by voice recognition.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petra Simone, aye.
Justin Nelliker, aye.
Jerry Sagnol, aye. item 3D, Brenner Schlossman and Wallman, yearly review of their fees. I trust you're going to handle that, Carolyn.
No, I think more Leanna. She made a chart, right, that she could share. Okay. So the question was, under our contract, every year you review whether or not you want to continue with the flat fee of $6,000 a month plus our disbursements, or you want to go to our actual billings for the month. And so Leanna made this chart.
This is Leanna Ambersley. Taylor put together this chart. She went through from last year, all the Brenner, Salzman, and Wallman bills from June of 2020 up until the present time. The first column where it says total fees is, you know, it was on each bill that said, you know, what the total fees were for that month. However, SURF is in the flat rate of $6,000. So the column farthest to the right shows how much SURF actually paid that month. Sometimes it's flat 6,000. Sometimes it was a little bit more if there was disbursements, which is that middle column. In that additional, there was an additional one in December of 2020 for the rewrite of the SURF pension plan. So that was an extra payment. The totals are at the bottom. So had we not been in the flat rate, the total fees for the past year was around almost $100,000. But the amount that SURF did pay was $68,412.88.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Carolyn, police and fire did not go along with our billing structure, right, with the fees?
That's correct. They pay actual.
They pay actual per capita right. charge.
Right.
I'm just curious, was there any type of analysis done with them trying to determine if, because this is impressive.
Yes, right? there was. We're going to present it to them as well next week.
Okay.
I move that we continue with the current structure of the monthly amount.
Kathy Graves, I second.
Motion been made and seconded. Is there discussion on this motion?
I just wanted to say thank you to Taylor for putting together this information.
Good work. No discussion on the motion. In the absence of a motion properly made and seconded, all in favor indicate by saying aye by voice vote.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Patrick Simone, aye.
Justin Ellicker, aye.
Jerry Sagnell, aye. No abstentions, no negative votes. All right, item 3E, as a follow-up to the, I believe, the last meeting, executive, we have to go into executive session on this, right, Carolyn?
Yes.
Can we have a entertain a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Sagnella, can you just say before there's a vote who you wish to have remain in the executive session?
Okay, I believe that we're going to have Liana stay in as the administrator. Our attorney has to be present.
And Jack Strother will be present.
Jack Strother. Is that it? Does our financial consultant have to be present?
I think that might be helpful because this deals with the selection of money managers. So I think it'd be very helpful to have financial consultant.
Right, a motion was made to go into executive session. We've indicated the individuals will be present. Is there a second to that motion?
Susan Whetstone, I second.
A motion made and second. Is there a discussion on this motion? In the absence of motion promulgated made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye. By voice, vote.
Kathy Graves, aye.
Susan Whetstone, aye.
Mark Petrus Simone, aye.
Justin Ellicker, aye.
Jerry Sagnell, aye. No abstentions, no negative votes. We are in executive session. Proceed, Carolyn.
Well, Jack is presenting this item.
Excuse me, Derek, how long did you give them?
I gave them 10 minutes.
Okay,
10
perfect.
15 minutes.
Perfect.
Yeah, just
because so, I have a 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay. So just to refresh everybody's memory, historically, what we'll do periodically is bring existing managers back to the table just to present, to refresh everybody's memory, what their process is and their outlook on their markets and their space and kind of how they've done performance wise. So the first manager, per Trustee Graves's request, was to bring a manager to the table. I brought Fuller and Thaler from the West Coast. They're our small cap manager. Just to refresh your memories, we had only $5 million with Fuller and Thaler about a year ago. We kept them very purposely undervalued or under allocated just because we didn't like their space. About 6 to 8 months ago, we started to increase their exposure because we saw small cap opportunities existing in the marketplace, and it turned out very, very well. They really have done a fantastic job. So with that being said, I would like to give Fuller and Thaler about 10 to 15 minutes if you would like, just to refresh on their strategy, how they run money, and kind of what they see in their space moving forward. So if that's okay with you all, we'd love to have them brought in.
I'll do that now.
I think it's just one person, right?
Please. Correct, Mr. Ben Johnson.
So just to let everybody know, Ben Johnson is a portfolio manager over at Fuller and Thaler. We've hired Fuller and Thaler. We've been with them since May of 2017. So they are also in California or West Coast. So it's bright and early there for Ben. So thanks, Ben, for joining us at 6 a.m. your time. You're on mute. There you go.
If I had a dollar for every time I started a Zoom on mute, I think I'd be retired.
So thank you, Ben.
Yeah,
so
thank you all for having me.
Yeah, so you have about 10 to 15 minutes just to just review. We've been with you since 2017. I think it's great to just have a little refresher of your philosophy and how you guys run money, and then obviously the results and what you see moving forward. So the floor is yours, and thank you for your time.
Cool. Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me, and thank you all for joining. And of course, thank you very much for your business. Leanna, are you running the slides?
Or yeah, did you want me to stop sharing? Is it easier for you to share it?
It might be easier if I do it. Otherwise, I'll be pestering you to change the page all the time.
Sure, go ahead.
There you go. It's the same one, though, for you. So I'm Ben Johnson. I am with Fuller and Thaler Asset Management. We're a privately owned boutique asset manager based in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so we're privately owned in a true sense in that we're 100% employee owned and controlled. So there's no outside investment whatsoever. In other words, we answer to no one but our clients, like you. I've got a few interesting people involved here, namely Daniel Kahneman and Dr. Richard Thaler. Both of them are Nobel laureates in economics on the behavioral side of the equation. And if you wanted to learn more about behavioral finance and economics, they've written some great books there on the right-hand side of the page. I'd recommend all three. If I had to pick just one, I'd probably go with Misbehaving. And Dr. Fuller met these guys back in the 80s, long before anyone had even heard of behavioral finance, recognized they were doing something unique. He left the chair position at Washington State University, put his money where his mouth was, and started this firm. And that was going on 30 years ago. As a firm, we are exclusively focused on applying behavioral finance. I'm sure some of you have heard of it. If I were to summarize the idea or the topic to someone, I would say it's about understanding that there is a difference between what people should do versus what they actually end up doing when it comes to their money. So it turns out those two things are not always the same, unfortunately. You could think of that as the intersection between finance and psychology. One of my favorite pages is here, and it gets about how we go about making money for our clients, and that's a fairly unique approach. And that typically when you're speaking to someone in my seat, they may say that they're good and they beat their benchmark and they deliver returns because maybe they think they have an informational edge. That is, they think that they know something that others don't. Another group may claim that they have some kind of analytical edge, where maybe they think they have more IQ points and they analyze the information better than others. We make neither of those claims. Rather, the secret sauce at Fuller and Thaler, we would call it the behavioral edge. And it's rooted in the idea that we are focused on, many others don't account for, the human element. You could summarize everything that we do at Fuller and Thaler by saying that investors make mistakes and we look for them. Two of the mistakes that investors consistently and predictably make, they overreact and they underreact. Our trick is understanding when investors are likely to do one versus the other. I'll walk you through both processes step by step, refresh your memory on how we do what we do, and then close up with performance and leave some room for questions. But one of the things that we look for at Fuller and Thaler is when people are overreacting to vivid and emotional stories. Now, people tend to overreact due to something called loss aversion. And loss aversion says the pain we all feel from a loss, it's about twice as powerful as any euphoria we may feel from a gain. Another reason people overreact and create opportunities is due to something called the availability bias, which I find particularly amusing. It says that the frequency with which we all think something occurs, it's correlated with reality, but it's also correlated with news, media, press coverage, headlines. In other words, our perception of how often certain things happen can be distorted by things that we see. So how do we take advantage of the fact that people tend to overreact to vivid and emotional stories? The event we look for that signals we may have an overreaction opportunity, we start by looking for big and unusual insider buying or big and unusual share buybacks. So we're looking for the insiders at a company who step in, put their money where their mouth is. If we see that buying, we're going to look backwards to see, does it look like the kind of conditions or circumstances under which the market may be overreacting to some news? Has it been beaten up over a long period of time? In a nutshell, we're looking at an opportunity here. We're looking at a stock that's been beaten up. The insiders at that company are stepping in a big way with their own private cash, while the rest of the market probably hates that stock, thinks it's going to keep going down like that blue dotted line shows. Something's gone wrong at this company, obviously, since why the stock price has gone down. So we've got to make sure we think these businesses have the ability to turn around and go back up. So, of course, we will dig into the fundamentals of this business, look at their business model, look at their balance sheet, try to get a feeling for, do we think this business can stay in business? Can they keep their doors open and their bills paid through a recession, through a pandemic, and without getting in trouble with their bank? So I'll rehash all that. If there's insider buying on a stock that's been beaten up, where we have conviction in the business model and the balance sheet, we will buy these companies and hold on to them until we see the opposite behavioral event of insider selling or share issuance. So notice what got us in gets us out. The idea here is that if anybody has any idea as to the intrinsic value of a company and or that business's future prospects, we think it's probably the C-suite executives, not Wall Street executives. This is half of what we do. The second half, I think, is equally as interesting, of course, although it's entirely different. So people overreact to vivid and emotional stories, and they underreact to dull data or unexpected information, especially if you have strong prior expectations. This is driven by another set of biases, namely anchoring and adjustment. That is a mental shortcut we all use, where we'll anchor on what we know and adjust from there, trying to get to the information that we don't know. Being fallible and human, we can get anchored to things that don't matter, like, for example, what I'm about to discuss here in a moment. Anchoring and adjustments made a lot worse by another bias that I'm personally quite familiar with, overconfidence. So how do we take advantage of anchored, overconfident investors? Another event-driven process, though this time the event we're looking for, they are big and unusual earnings surprises. So this company comes to the market, comes to the news with big good news. And when we see this big good news, we want to see it driven by something that we can deem as being permanent and sustainable and specific to that company. So the best example that I could think of would be a company comes out, it's got a new product, and that product is selling better than everyone expects. The idea here is when met with this really big good news, the analysts with Wall Street, the people covering this stock, they'll go back to their estimates and their models. They'll make a few adjustments, but they're going to be anchored on the old data and overconfident in their models and analysis. And in turn, what you're going to see is these companies typically continue to beat expectations moving forward. I don't know if anybody remembers Domino's Pizza when they came out with their quote-unquote Our Pizza Sucks campaign back in 2009. They changed their pizza dough recipe, started buttering the crust. And I was a broke college student at the time, so cheap pizza got better. This was great news. Well, what is pizza dough? Well, it's permanent, it's sustainable, and it's specific to Domino's. They had a huge earnings surprise. That pizza sold much better than expected. From 2011 to 2016, Domino's beat Wall Street expectations every single quarter. We will exit these companies once they miss on earnings. At that point, we would say that the analysts have caught up, the bias has gone away, they're no longer anchored to the old information. And look, they always catch up, but it can take them quite a long time to do that. For example, 4 years in the case of Domino's. In any case, what we're trying to do is exploit the gap between investor expectations and reality, whether they be overreacting to bad news or they be underreacting to good news. As Derek mentioned, you've been with us for several years at this point. I cannot believe it is already middle of June in 2021, but you've done exceptionally well. The performance of this account has been phenomenal, outperforming the stated benchmark, which is the Russell 2000, by almost 4.5% on an annualized basis, which is a significant number to have outperformed, given all that we've seen these past 18 months with COVID and otherwise. So we're quite pleased with performance, and we hope you are too. What questions can I answer as I think I'm at my 10-minute mark?
Are there any questions from the trustees?
I have a question, Ben, if I may. So, you know, your process is proven over time to have worked quite well from your performance. But how do you guys handle situations like recently where there's just so much complacency in the market? There's inordinate amount of Fed stimulus. You know, it seems like all rationale is taken out of the market with the exception of some, you know, growth value plays. How are you guys handling managing the portfolio in this type of environment?
Yeah, it's certainly tricky. That's for sure. I definitely think now's a time to be prudent if ever. I would say kind of goes back to how our process works in terms of what we're looking for. On one hand, we're looking for insiders putting their money where their mouth is. And we think they know better than anyone how a particular macro environment, inflation, interest rates, et cetera, will affect their business. And if they're comfortable taking money out of their own wallets and buying their company, that can get us comfortable as well. On the other side, looking for this good news, clearly if a company is adapting to their environment, they're delivering results, and they're beating earnings expectations, doing the people expected, they must be doing well in adapting, again, innovating, executing on their strategy in the face of things like inflation, interest rates, et cetera. So we let our process dictate how we invest in the market. We're not trying to predict where we think the market will go. We're not market timers. That's not our forte. Instead, we're trying to find opportunities that we think have been created by the misbehavior of other investors. And I think based on some of the unknowns and complacency, you can expect to see more misbehavior from investors than normal, which I think is the perfect kind of environment for what we're doing. So we're not trying to predict the market. We're trying to predict investor misbehavior. I think that's a very unique lens through which to view investing.
My name is Susan Whetstone. I have a question.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. Have you been influenced in any way by all the meme stock activity?
And just sitting and watching. We have not participated in any of the stocks that you've seen going across, you know, the squawk box on the financial news channels. I would say those have been some of the most unique things I've seen in my short career in this industry. But if you think about in our process, I mentioned we're looking for a solid business model, a solid balance sheet. We want companies that we think are sustainable that are going to be around. And those companies just don't fit that part of the process.
Thank you.
But it's been very unusual to watch.
Ben, what's the turnover in the portfolio?
Hi, can I ask Ben a question?
Sorry, Mark.
Please.
Hi, Ben. This is Mark Petrosimone. Is there a minimum value or a maximum value that you look for when you're investing in a company? A minimum value of the company itself or a maximum value?
I see what you're saying, like the size of the company?
Yeah.
Like how big is it?
Yeah,
so there is, and it is mostly dictated by can we get in and out without moving prices? It's called liquidity, which you may be familiar with. But essentially, we're a small cap manager, and there's a range of small cap companies, which is typically something like $1 billion market cap company to something like $6 billion. And that is a rough estimate. It's constantly changing. As the market goes up, so do those numbers. As the market comes down, so do those numbers. So it is a range. I would say a rough estimate is somewhere like $1 billion to $6 billion size market cap company.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I have to check almost every other day these days to see, wait, what is the number now? Yeah. It's always changing.
Mm-hmm. Ben, what is the average turnover of the portfolio?
The portfolio on average, we would say, is going to be in the 30 to 50% range, typically on the low end of that. However, last year, which by the way, for everyone that's on the call, we insider buying is something that we look at. We saw more insider buying last year than this firm has seen in the 30 years we've been in business. That typically bodes quite well for future prospects for our strategy. That in addition, however, can create higher turnover as you find new opportunities. So I'd have to double check what the turnover was last year, but I would guess it was on that 50% end based on all the good ideas that we found. But on average, call it 30 to 50%.
And how many names?
That is a good question as well. We did not include that. It should be, let me get you the exact number.
I don't need that, roughly, typically.
Typically, I would say the 100 to 140.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it, like your market cap question, it's perpetually changing.
Sure.
But these are good rules of thumb.
Ben, do the federal government's COVID relief funds have any benefit to the small cap area?
Certainly, I would say directly or indirectly, it's not something that we've been looking for, and that, again, we're trying to remove ourselves from that, you know, predicting, you know, how is this going to affect these companies? We'll let the insiders do the talking with their wallets and or let the company do the talking with their revenue and earnings. So certainly there was an impact. I would say one of the biggest places you saw the COVID stimulus and the Fed movements was in small banks. So regional banks have facilitated a lot of the loans to small businesses, which has generated quite a bit of revenue for them. So as opposed to, say, 2008, when banks were the problem, there have actually been a lot of help this year in terms of distributing funds to small businesses. And a lot of regional banks, small cap banks, have been helping, you know, mom and pop shops, you know, around town, because, you know, mom and pop doesn't do business with Bank of America. So you've seen we have a heavy exposure to regional banks. And they've seen a pretty big boon from just helping facilitate, you know, some of the small business loans. So that would be one of the few things I could think of as having a meaningful impact that we took advantage of indirectly. It's not a reason we purchased banks. We bought banks because there was an insane amount of insider buying going on last year.
Okay.
That's a great question.
Thank you.
What other questions can I answer? These are good ones.
Anything else? Ben, thank you for your time. It's been good to see you guys, and performance has been great. So thank you. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, I'll tell him. Okay. Thank you all, Susan, Mark. Thank you very much for the questions.
Thank you.
Derek, you as well. I appreciate your time. Thank you all for your business, and I hope everyone's happy and healthy out in Connecticut.
Thank you,
Ben. Bye-bye.
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 Okay.
Who's next, Derek?
That's it. So it's up to you folks. Is there anything more on your agenda you need to go over before investments, or do you want me to do my part now, or you tell me?
Yes, Kathy. We can move to investments.
I think so. Don't you have an item 9 report, A, 9A update on how we're doing with respect to women and minority investors?
Sure. So I can, it's actually women, minority, and I believe veteran.
Veterans, yeah. Yes.
So actually, go ahead, sorry.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do want to make a clarification because it said women and minorities. But it really should, in our policy, it's called emerging managers. And so I think we should point out in the minutes that we're looking at emerging managers consistent with our policy, our investment policy.
So those are two very different terminologies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think that we have in the investment policy in a MWE policy.
When I looked at the policy, there is a section that refers to that the board can consider emerging managers. It defines who the emerging managers are. And so I want it to be clear that we weren't looking at it just because it was women and minorities, because that's actually, I think, prohibited by our code of ethics. And so that what we would be looking at is within our investment policy, we are able to consider emerging managers.
So Carolyn, I can't talk policy.
That, right? Right. I'm sorry, Derek. Say that again.
No, yeah. So I can't speak policy. That's up to Carolyn and you.
Yeah. So what I have, and I was concerned I might not have the most recent policy, but I have the emerging managers. City of New Haven Employees Retirement Fund Emerging investment manager policy. And then, Susan, do you have the same thing, which emerging managers can include but are not limited to minority-owned firms and women-owned firms? Do you have that language?
So according to the minutes last year, Susan, your request was utilization of women and minority vendors, according to the minutes. You're on mute. You're on mute. Susan, there you go.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct that that was my request, but I think my request was not consistent with our policy. And I think our policy talks about these being part of emerging managers.
So I understand, but they're responding to your specific request versus to the policy.
Correct.
Yeah. So we can respond to the policy next month. Is that okay, Derek?
That's fine.
Respond to the initial request today, but
sure.
We'll look at the policy next month.
Sure. So in fact, I think with the exception of one manager, I think they are uniquely similar. So I think it's not always the case that it's one and the same. For example, Herndon Capital, a number of years ago, some of you that were here, was a minority-owned firm that was not an emerging manager. They had a very large, I think it was $20 billion under management. So they were not an emerging manager, but were minority-owned. But with the exception of Herndon, who unfortunately is no longer with us, I think everybody else is, in fact, an emerging manager and or falls in. So I think there's a lot of overlap here. So with that said, you know, Fuller and Thaler, who just presented, are a veteran-owned firm. So we could start with them. You know, so that's certainly falls under the veteran. And they are also an emerging, that you heard them say they're a boutique shop. So they are a small money manager that is also veteran-owned. Basis, who we've just spoken about, is minority business owned, women business owned, and also an emerging manager. So we have Basis. Fairview Capital is also a minority owned, women business owned, and also an emerging manager. So we have, those are the three that we currently have. I did do a little bit of research in what we did have in the past and what transpired. So we had Glovista. A lot of you remember Glovista. That was minority-owned, emerging manager. They were terminated due to underperformance, and we moved their investment to a passive index. A lot of you also remember we were going to... So Herndon Capital, who I mentioned, was not an emerging manager. They were minority-owned. They were not an emerging manager. They were rather large market cap. They had a lot of series of unforeseen circumstances, and they actually closed their firm. But that money went to Cook and Bieler, who is not, there is some minority ownership in Cook and Bieler, but they are not majority minority owned, and they are not emerging manager. Prior to that, we also had NCM Capital. I don't know if you folks remember NCM. They were minority owned and emerging manager. They were actually acquired, and we were not comfortable with the acquisition, and they were terminated. And then the last one that I want to mention for just for the record, Materin Capital. So when Fuller and Thaler interviewed, ironically, one of the three managers was Materin Capital, which was women-owned and emerging manager. If you all, those of you who were here, there was a $10 million allocation to small cap, and we decided to split the business between $5 million to Fuller and Thaler and $5 million to Materin. And Materin actually declined the $5 million and would not take the smaller investment. So that was one that was a women business owned and emerging manager, and they actually declined to work with us. So all $10 million went to Fuller and Thaler, and turns out that was a good move. So that's what we have. So currently, just to reiterate, Fuller and Thaler, Basis, Fairview are the three that we currently have.
And that represents what percentage of the assets under management?
Quick math, 25. Well, some of these were committed, so because they're private investments. So I'll say 25, 30, about 30 million. So about 15. About 15%.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Well, Derek, thank you. And Carolyn, I'm not sure I have the same policy that you were referencing. I was reading the investment objectives and something else that was distributed, I think, at the last meeting.
Oh, that's
the annual. And Matera, and I just want to mention, was also based in Stanford.
Right.
Which was local, which would have been a really nice plus for us to have a Connecticut-based minority and women-owned firm. With they had good performance as well.
Yes.
Very good performance.
In fact, though, I think they actually closed their shop.
Really?
Yes. Just recently.
So, Derek, thank you. That was really helpful.
And you're welcome.
Pleased with the 15% participation. I think, you know, that it's not that a particular number matters, but I think it matters that we are working with emerging managers at some reasonable points, percentage. And then I did want to ask Carolyn if there is a separate policy, or do I have the right policy, or could
you have the right policy?
Send me the policy.
What page is it on yours? We don't have to do this now.
Yeah, can you and I do this offline? Because I have to
absolutely
look at it on my phone.
This is really not a good idea to do it now. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
So we're ready for Raymond James update.
Sure. So if Leanna could put up the performance report, that would be helpful. Leanna, if you'd like, moving forward, I saw how easy that was for Ben to flip through. So at some point I can start to, or if it's easier for you to do it rather than having you flip through, if you want to hand over that moving forward, you just have to educate me on how to do that because I'm not great at this. So.
Okay, no problem.
Okay. All right. So this is through May 31st. I know we're well into June, but obviously end of May, you could go to one more page, I think, or two more pages down right here. You can see the total funds up to $215 million. So that's definitely a high watermark for this fund, as long as I can remember. 1 month up 1.4, 3 months, 5.74, year to date through May. So 5 months of calendar year, 6.88. Fiscal year, you can see just under 25%. So as long as this performance holds through to the end of June, we're going to have a very, very solid fiscal year. And you can see that, you know, 1, 2, and 3 year performance does, you know, the positive performance from this year and last year have trickled through, and lifted all of those years. So 2 year performance is 18.1 per year, a compound rate of return, and 3 years, 12.13 compound rate of return for 3 years. And you can see since inception of back to just pre-financial crisis, obviously 2008 wiped a lot of funds out. You can see this is 6.44. So trending back towards that bogey that we need to hit long-term. But you can see that, you know, obviously short-term, the fund has done very, very well. I think a lot of that is done with some good management, some good allocation, and some good active bets. There's not much here notable mention except Cook and Buehler, who I mentioned earlier. They have done some great outperformance for the quarter, year to date, you know, fiscal year to date, and 1 year and 2 years. So, I mean, they're outperforming on a 1 year track record of 14% per year. So that's a great outperformance of their passive benchmark. You look down to that's large cap value. Obviously Fuller and Thaler, you can see represented there. You know, obviously some strong outperformance with Fuller and Thaler. Also, just so you know, I asked WCM, they are also a California based firm, to present at the next meeting. Just a quick update.
Can I interrupt you just for a quick second?
Sure.
Mark. On the Fuller and Thaler, mm-hmm. we have the inception date of January 19. Should that be January 17?
This is just performance that we were able to generate from historical when we switch firms. So that's why you showed we only can report on that.
Got you.
But yes.
Oh, I see. All right. Thank you.
Yep. So WCM, I asked to present at next month's meeting in a similar fashion, 10 to 15 minutes, just to tell their story because they've had some marvelous outperformance and just want to understand a little better how they've done it. So we're going to ask them to come in again for next month. But you can see fiscal year to date, they're up 38.57. That's 500 basis points better than their benchmark. Their 1 year is up 48 versus 38. That's, 10% better than their benchmark. And these are compound rates of return. Look at 2 years, they're up 30 versus 15. That's a double. And really 3 years and since inception, 3 years are up 21.5 versus 8.25. That's not a triple, but almost a triple. And these are compound annual rates of return. And you can see since inception, 16% versus 6%. Again, almost a triple. So those are some very, very good returns, active returns. So anxious to hear them speak as well next month. Next page. Getting into some fixed income and others, so fixed income as the 10-year bounces around and inflation talks, fixed income is taken on the chin. So when yields go up, bond values go down, and we saw the 10-year go up almost to 1.75. It's now settled. So you're starting to see that there's some pressure on fixed income. It's something that we have to have in the portfolio. We are very much on an underweight fixed income for all those reasons. When interest rates move around, it's something that we need to be careful of. Obviously, when there's turmoil in the markets, fixed income is your sleep well part of the portfolio. You need to have it in there, and it does work well as a ballast during rough seas. But right now, it's very tough to have domestic fixed income. That's just even though we are there, we still have some outperformance. You see fiscal year to date, Dole & McNary is up 1.37 versus their benchmark, which is down one. 1 year, they're up 3 versus down 0.4. 2 years, they're up 5.16 versus 4.39. And then since inception, 7.06 versus 5.65. So they're giving us some outperformance a little bit longer term, but short term, we're getting chewed up a little bit in fixed income. We have some international bonds. The reason why these are in the portfolio typically is just because our 10 years bouncing around doesn't mean that the equivalent of other countries is doing the same. So as you can see, our 3 month return for domestic bonds are down 1.66. You can see international bonds are up 1.64. So that's a good complement to our domestic fixed income. Year to date, very similar. But again, if you go out fiscal year to date, 1 year, you're getting stock like returns in international bonds, 9.55 and 12.13 respectively. So those are good returns from, fixed income or your sleep well portfolio. Alternatives, the private investments, these have not been updated yet through May. It will probably be updated in June because those are typically quarterly, with the exception of Alcyon Innovation Fund, which is up 21% year to date versus 4.75, fiscal year 21.25, and 1 year is 21.28. So that's doing quite well. We have a $5 million commitment with them. So they're not fully committed. So that is the fund that I was talking about earlier when we were in executive session about, Alcyon was asking for their new fund to be presented. So we presented them along with Fairview Capital, and we actually hired both. Moving on, real estate again has not been updated. So I'll keep you posted when that is updated. Next page, please. Alcyon Growth, they are not infallible, as you can see. They're 3 month or quarter and year to date, they've gotten beaten up a bit. But 1 month are starting to come back a bit in May. You can see fiscal year to date 9.25, 1 year 15.61. But their 2 years and 3 years and since inception numbers are very, very strong. So 26% per year versus 6, 20% versus 5, and 17.61 versus just under 5. So done very well there. And Ballyasny is a long short fund. You can see they're in line with their benchmark with the exception of the inception date. So everything that's in the
portfolio. I'm sorry to interrupt. I have to hop off. There's no important votes or anything, is there?
No.
No, you're good. Thank you, Mayor.
I apologize, everyone. Good to see you all.
Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So with that said, everything is going well with the portfolio. I could field any questions here, or if not, talk briefly about the markets. Okay, I just want to highlight a few things here. A lot has happened since this. So this was June 10th, so not long ago. We try to keep as much information, you know, current, but as we know, the markets move daily. But if you can see, we're talking about some positive runs in the market, but short term, it looked like the market stalled through June 10th, but we have then since gone above the, you know, what we call overbought levels. There's different supports and whatnot. But one thing I wanted to highlight is in that third paragraph, if you look where it says to highlight, you know, obviously piggyback on what Ben was talking about, you see where it says 100, middle of the third paragraph, right? It says 100% of banks are above their 200-day moving average. That's reflecting a strong intermediate-term technical backdrop, and valuation remains attractive in our view. So basically, Raymond James is recommending, you know, bank allocations. The group. So then you look at the overall marketplace and say, where is there good valuations? Where is there opportunity? And we see banks are trading at a very large discount, both price to book and price to earnings basis. So we're at pre-crisis levels on the bank side. So we see a very unique opportunity with banks. So one of the things I was going to talk about is those of you who have the history on the fund, remember we utilized some of those leveraged indices, you know, for different strategies for banks, and we've done some for Japan and European notes. One of the things I want to examine, and if I see something that makes sense, I'll certainly bring it to your attention, would like to highlight a bank sector investment of some sort, perhaps, because we see good valuations there in the short and intermediate term. So intermediate term is, you know, 1 to 2 years. So I would like to examine that. And I'll for the next meeting, I'll look to see if there's anything that makes sense in an investment in either regional banks or, you know, just banks in general. And I actually, it coincides with what Florent Thaler was saying as well. Next page. So we'll just look at employment. So this is like macro economics here. You know, there's been a lot of talk about unemployment. The unemployment rate is coming down, but unfortunately, there's also the participation rate that we look at. So it's not just the unemployment rate, but it's also participation rate. So unemployment rate came down, but the participation rate came down as well. So that is, you know, a little bit of a false positive there. So we need to go a little bit further in unemployment to get back to where we were pre-crisis. We are eagerly waiting that. And then inflation has been the talk of the town, for lack of a better term. But we, as well as I'd say 75% of money managers out there, think that inflationary pressures that we're seeing are largely transitory, which means, you know, basically we think it's a short term inflationary pressure. We don't think that it's something that's here to stay. So as, you know, employment improves over time, that will certainly help. We have an accommodative Fed, and hopefully inflationary pressures will subside through the summer. That will make for a more, so we might see some turbulence in the markets through the summer. It's not unlikely, but ultimately we expect that things will smooth out through Q4 of 2021. Next page just talks about, you know, obviously fundamentals, PEs. What's happened here, we talked about price to earnings. Everyone talks about the PE and valuations on stocks being expensive. They were 24 times earnings last fall. Now, because a lot of these companies have come in and beat earnings expectations, that has right-sized the PEs down to like 21.5, which is historically where we like to see stock valuations. So things are going okay there. I'm going to skip the next page. Okay, go right here. So this just graphically depicts the top left, the S&P 500, and we look at some fundamentals and technicals. You can see that the S&P has actually broken through that little red line. That was what we once called a ceiling. The upper end of the range, we've actually broken through that recently, and we are closing above that red line. So that is a good we closed at 42.45 on the S&P. So we are above that limit, that level that we call is a resistance level. 42.38 was the resistance level when this report was written on the 10th. So we've broken through it and closed successfully above that line, which is a positive for the S&P. It's a positive on a technical level. Next page, please. Just coincides with small cap. So our thesis that small cap was going to do well, which it did, as you can see from our performance from our small cap manager, but we also think that it's going to continue to do well. So this just reaffirms our conviction of small cap. We think that it's still trading at a discount to the S&P, which gives us an opportunity. So we are slightly overweight our small cap, and we're going to let that run because we do like the landscape. Ben did a great job of articulating their process, and he mentioned that their turnover last year was at 50%, the high end of the range. And turnover, just for everybody's clarification, what that means is the amount of times how many times they sell a portfolio. So when a portfolio is 50% turnover, that means half their portfolio are in new stocks as of last year. So 50% of their portfolio was turned over, which they're at the high end of that range. So that's good that we're paying an active manager to be active. And you can see Florent Thaler is at the high end because they see some very, very strong, when he said insider buying last year, was at historic 30-year historic highs. So when you have insiders buying to the level at which they see, that's historically very, very good for those companies. And we echo that sentiment and see it as a good allocation, a good possibility, potential to make money for the fund.
Derek, can I ask you a question right there?
Sure.
Because I get confused very easily. But the designation of small cap versus S&P. I mean, Ben mentioned Domino's, a $6 billion corporation, mm-hmm. but they trade in small cap versus why aren't they in just like in the S&P? Is it what puts a particular company in one and not the other? Is it more market capitalization or?
Exactly.
It is.
Yep. So I think large, like the S&P 500 large cap, I think starts at about 10 billion.
10 billion.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, Ben, I think was a little, you know, again, that does change market capitalization. He said, I think what, 1 to 6.
Yeah.
We see small cap is 2 to 10, you know, and 10 billion above is, you know, mid to
small. S&P.
Yeah. The S&P is 10 and over typically. And again, that is okay. a fluid statement, but yes.
So are there a lot of companies that, there may be, but is that a traditional thing? A company grows and will leave small cap trading and go into the S&P?
That's an ideal situation, actually, Mark. So there are some managers out there that look for, actually, typically when you see it in like bond managers that will look for a company that has a lower bond rating and is going to get upgraded. That's a positive for a bond. Also the first stock. If a company grows in market capitalization, you know, and you have a small cap manager that bought that stock, that's actually very strong. If their market cap is growing, that stock has grown and you've made money with that. So that's an ideal situation for a small cap manager to buy a small cap stock that has grown to a large market cap.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And then moving on, just a few pages. So small caps look favorable. Interest rates, we don't need to spend any time talking about interest rates right now. But the 10-year has settled, which is a good thing. But we do think ultimately the 10-year is going to float back up closer to 2 by the end of the year. But we do think it's going to be more methodical, not really, you know, barring some, you know, egregious language from the Fed today. We'll talk about that, but the Fed is meeting today. If they, you know, I don't know if you remember, maybe 3 summers ago, there was a taper tantrum where the Fed came out and said they're going to end their bond buying. And there was a, you know, or they hinted that they're going to end their bond buying. There was a taper tantrum and fixed income sold off egregiously. You know, the 10-year moved 100 basis points in less than a month. So I think they've learned their lesson. I think there's going to be some hints at some tapering, but I don't know that it's going to jar the market. We hope not. But if that does not happen, we see a more slow, methodical float up on the 10-year from where it's right around 1.5 right now, back up to closer to 2 by the end of the year. But we think it'll be a little bit more methodical and not a spike. We hope, at least. Next page. Again, this is technology. We could scroll ahead here. Banks. So again, this just shows visually the valuations of banks. You can see historically they're at a low P price to book, price to earnings ratio. Relative to the S&P 500, there's some good opportunity here over the short and intermediate term. So I'm going to proactively look at potentially an investment in some sort of bank specific index if we can find one, and I'll have that for you next month, and we can certainly talk about it. But other than that, I have no formal recommendations for you all, and unless you have any questions, that concludes our conversation.
Any questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments on the investment report? I think overall we're doing pretty good. We've made some really good investment decisions, and it shows in our portfolio performance.
We agree.
Thank you, Derek. Are there any questions? Were you going to say something, Derek? No. Any questions? Would someone like to move that we adjourn?
I move that we adjourn. Susan Whetstone.
Mark Petrosimone, I second it.
We can't take any votes because you don't have a quorum. Oh,
so. Right, so it's adjourned.
We're here forever.
See you later then.
So Carolyn, how do we adjourn the meeting without moving?
We're just going to end it.
Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you, everyone, and I'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.